Keeping it real on CliffCentral.com.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Auto Central here on Cliff Central, proudly powered by autotrader.co.za, your trusted motoring marketplace. It is that time again where we discuss everything motoring and the world of motoring. So a little bit of a change up in the studio here today. I am, of course, joined by Wilmarie Janssen van Rensburg.
Hello, how are you?
All right, yourself?
Good, good.
How was the weekend?
Fantastic. This time no moving, but housewarming.
Housewarming. Have you recovered yet?
I have, yeah.
Yeah. Had to think about that one.
It was a whole weekend. It was great. But I also got to enjoy the Hilux.
Okay. The new Hilux.
Yes.
And thoughts?
Great. But still, in terms of the money value, I wanted to, you know, we've spoken about that. Mm-hmm. But you know what? We were talking about doing a possible race there, remember, with you and the T-Rex and that. And yeah. I thought it actually wouldn't be fair.
To me. To you on the bike, yeah.
Yes, because, I mean, if you come there on the Hilux, that thing just floats. It's just really not fair. It doesn't feel anything. So
whereas on the bike, it's transmitting a little more.
The whole time. So, no. So you can't do T-Rex.
So are you rewinding that? Yes, are you recalling that? We're going to have to choose a different sort of location for that.
You've got to have a more like it's got to be more of a bucky, not a, what is the Hilux? It's not a bucky. It's a.
Well, the Hilux is.
Off-road vehicle, man.
Well, the Rex is an abomination. That's what it is.
Yes. So it just wouldn't be fair.
If it's in a standard one, you know, if you're sitting there with a 3 liter or whatsoever, we've got the 2.8 now. I think it's a 2.8 diesel, you know. So I don't know which one you were driving now of the new range, but yeah, the Rex is an anomaly. It really is a 5 liter Lexus ISF motor.
Look, I'm impressed. I mean, after our last chat last week with Arthur. Yes. I obviously looked at it a little bit differently now, because now it was like
noticing
the screen, you know, is it outdated, is it, you know, the whole technology, how far behind, or are they on track, all those kind of things. So it was really interesting for me, and it's like a little bit of a space age.
A lot has changed, hey, in that sense, hey, if just Hilux, over the last year alone, a lot has changed in terms of the way that these light commercial vehicles, your LCVs, your buckies, are being equipped. They really packed to the hilt.
I got to ask you something, though. Mm. Do you recall seeing those little lines coming from, this is the driver's seat now, okay, from the roof down the front screen. Mm-hmm. It's like down to the right up. So it's like two little blocks.
Okay.
No one can tell me what that's for.
It is a aerial, believe it or not. The new Fortuna's got it as well.
For what? Oh, just for the aerial that's there?
For the radio and for your cell phone, believe it or not.
My word, I was wondering, is this for this new wiper electronic system?
No, that sensor's housed basically by the rear view mirror. It is, yeah, it's actually your aerials and your connectivity. It runs through that, yeah.
Because when you sit on the passenger side, it looks like it's in your view. You know, it's going to block it. But when you're driving, you don't even notice it. Yeah. It's actually very interesting. No, I'm impressed, I must say. I am.
And there we go. Also the voice of our other co-host today joining us again, Lawrence Meany. How are we doing?
All good. No complaints.
Yeah. And you know all about Fortuna and Hilux. You did the launch of both of them, so almost virtually back-to-back now.
That is correct.
They've definitely upped the game in terms of the tech stakes, eh?
Oh, yeah. The Fortuna, not really much has changed on the outside, but it is the interior that has seen the biggest change.
Yeah. We're also joined in studio by a very special guest, and it is Rudolf Mahoney. He's the head of brand and communication for Westbank. Welcome, Rudolf.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah. You found the place okay gathering. You're here and
you're on time.
On time, yeah, for a change.
Yes. Wilmarie is cutting things fine of late.
Did you notice?
Yeah, of late.
But I had a special coffee somewhere.
Oh, you had a special coffee somewhere. Well, Rudolf, welcome, and we hope that you enjoy it. I mean, we're looking forward to chatting to you about everything about in the world of vehicle finance. Very few purchases these days, I think, are done on a cash basis. Just about every vehicle purchase. What sort of percentage of vehicle sales are actually financed? I know it's not necessarily something you would know, or is it? Is it something that West Bank has their thumb on?
Yeah, we have some stats on that. Approximately 80% of cars sold are financed through the normal installment sale mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Some people do opt for extending their home loans. Other types of credit, yeah.
Okay.
And then the cheapies are sometimes bought on personal loans, but, mm-hmm. but I think probably about 95% of cars sold are sold by, some form of credit.
Some form of credit, you know, not just a cash sale per se.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, we also, and, we were chatting about it earlier, so I'm also looking, quite keen to chat to you about the some of the predictions that are coming up. So we're going to discuss all of that in today's show. Vilmarie, you've also got some questions.
Yeah, I got some. I want to ask you because something very interesting in West Bank somehow involved you over the Easter holidays. It's the heading I've got you. Easter holidays take toll on new vehicle sales. So it's saying here on 1st of April. So I don't know if this is now a what do you call it thing? What's on 1 April? April Fool's thing.
Joke, yeah.
Public holidays in March had a major impact on the new vehicle sales. The consolidated sales data from the National Association of Automobile Manufacturers, that's a mouthful, reports that the new vehicle sales plummeted 14% year on year, with only 47,000 roundabout new vehicles being sold.
Yeah, so I guess it's a combination of factors that results in the decline in the market that we're having now. I think they were just compounded by the Easter holidays we had. So obviously less working days in the month.
Of course.
Less trading days and more people on holiday, less people buying stuff. But mainly the cause for the decline in the new vehicle market is the appreciating of the currency. I think it's depreciated by 30 to 40% over the past 12 months or so. So about 80% of the cars that we do sell locally are imported and therefore subject to the currency risk. Mm. The manufacturers, they can only hedge their currency risk for so long before they need to start increasing car prices. So we've had double-digit car price increases during 2015, and the outlook is another double-digit car price increase for the duration of 2016. So cars are becoming a lot more expensive.
Now, when you say double digit, you mean like a 10 or 11% increase in the price, correct? That would be your double digits there, correct?
Well, it's by two numbers. So it could be between 10 and 20%, depending on the manufacturer and where they import cars from, because some of them, they would import cars from where the currency is favorable.
Mm-hmm.
But in most cases, the currency is not favorable and car prices will have to be increased by between 10 and 20%, just for the manufacturers to remain profitable.
Mm. Now in the next year or so.
Yes, the coming year. And they have either one or two strategies. Either they have a big increase at the beginning of the year and they get it over and done with, or they increase it by, smaller percentages, but quarterly. To make it less, more palatable for the consumer. But ultimately, at the end of the year, cars will be much more expensive than what they are now. That's the end result.
So buy quick.
Yeah, well, that's what we've seen in the rental companies.
Really?
Yeah, last month, the sales through the rental channel increased by 220%.
Wow.
Why so much, though? Because they buy in bulk.
They can't just put their prices up monthly. Or are you talking now like your Avis, those kind of
guys? The rental companies. Yeah. So they change their fleets at certain points in time in the year.
Yeah.
And, of course, when they buy 500 or 1,000 cars, it's in their best interest to try and avoid the car price increases.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
So that's why they're going into the market quite aggressively now to refleet their stock before the prices knock them.
Now, this is naturally all tied down to the general South African economy and the way that that's performing. And no doubt, like you say, over the past 6 months, the rand has taken a massive dive. The economy is, you know, circling the drain, if we could put it lightly. If we take a doom and gloom outlook on things, so do you think they were just sort of cashing in, predicting that it's going to get nasty? We sat at West Bank Car of the Year, and there was a presentation. CEO of West Bank did a presentation. It was Chris, I believe.
Yep.
And he did a presentation that I believe you actually compiled that that presentation, those stats and figures.
Doom and gloom.
That's my job. That's my job. So
that's your job. And the numbers weren't pretty. So do you think it's in light of all this information that the statisticians and the analysts are basically feeding back to the general public and the companies and that prompted them to go and purchase now, in fact?
Most definitely. So it's they assess the market and the inflationary figures with a hawk's eye.
Yeah.
And they were holding off on their car purchases during 2015. Mm. So interestingly, their sales through the rental channel decreased by, I think, 40% during 2015.
2015, okay.
Yeah, because their volumes and their revenue was also under pressure.
Yeah.
We know what happened with the
can't help you there. I'm trying to
exchange rate.
The Home Affairs where when you travel and with the visas and all that.
Oh, okay, yes.
So that impacted on the number of tourists which came to South Africa, and so that impacted on them. Another factor that impacts on the rental industry is Uber, believe it or not.
Yeah.
So a lot more people opting for Uber, and so the rental companies held off on their car purchases last year. But the cars are aging and they need to change them. And so they are very aggressive in the market because they know car prices will increase a lot more during the course of this year. And so they're just refleeting their stock.
So this is now public knowledge. So, I mean, no one can say they didn't know. This is the way to go. I'm just curious as well, Toyota Finance, am I right when I say majority Westbank? Or mainly?
So Toyota Financial Services is a PTY, which is owned by WesBank, yes. Toyota South Africa, and Toyota Japan.
Okay.
So everybody has a 33% stake in the business.
Okay, because, I mean, did you look at the Hilux numbers in sales?
We did. Absolutely amazing.
Everyone 3,200 units or something like that in the first month, which, I mean, is absolutely fantastic. I mean, that's put them as best-selling, not commercial vehicle, but best-selling double cab LCV, once again, above competition like a Ford Ranger and that. And it seems, fantastic move from them. By the way, I'm just going to say this show is not sponsored by Toyota. It is not endorsed in any way. It's just,
they just happen to be in the news.
Yes. Don't worry, they're going to fall off the blocks pretty soon. If you guys do have some questions, comments, and you do want to get involved in the conversation, please don't forget that you can get a hold of us on Twitter. You can also do it through Facebook. Twitter generally works a little better. So it's at AutoTraderSA. And don't forget to use the hashtag AutoCentral. And then you can also just have a mention and tag in at WesBank, WESBANK, or our individual handles there if you're wanting to chat to us individually. You can do that at SA Speed Queen, at Chad Lookoff, and at Lawrence Mini. We'll use the WesBank one for you today, Rudolph. How does that sound?
Happy to go with that.
Happy to go with that one. So I want to find out a couple of things. I'm going to make a core admission here. As much as I'm involved in the car game, I have only financed one vehicle.
Wow.
Yeah, only financed one vehicle. I don't buy and sell cars as often as people seem to think. In fact, I'm actually known for the vehicle I drive because I've been driving it that long. I've had it for over 10 years.
Oh my word,
I've had my Mazda for
Chad?
Over 10 years. Yes. And way back then, when I wasn't really earning fantastic money, I couldn't get the finance. So we put the car in my mother's name, okay? And I would pay her back, et cetera, et cetera. And then when it was paid off, I bought it off of her. So I did that. It was my mother's car. It's now my car.
But now you don't owe on it.
But I don't owe on it. No, I don't owe on it. So I took it over. And after that, I went and I bought a vehicle. And I tell you what, I went in there completely blind. I didn't do enough research.
Yeah.
And I get a sneaky suspicion that there's a lot of people out there that suffer the very same fate. You know, they're so excited. They know that they either need or want a new car.
Or they're desperate now. They have to get one.
Or they have to, yes. Yeah, you know, there are those situations now that, okay, well, maybe I've got a new job and I need to, you know, I need transport there. But I don't, you know, public transport isn't going to suffice. There isn't Gautrain. There isn't a taxi or bus service or a train service or something of the sorts. I'm going to have to drive myself to my new job. And that they're sort of forced into this, but without the sort of understanding. So, Rudolph, what are some of the tips that people need to keep in mind if they know absolutely nothing about how financing works? Where do they start? What are the first couple of basics that they really need to know?
Well, I think before you even start looking at a car, you need to work out your budget. I think that's most important.
Mm-hmm.
We have a calculator on our website where you can put in your income and all of your expenses, and it helps you to calculate your disposable income, because that's ultimately what will drive the installment that you can afford. And then there's another calculator, which is the vehicle repayment calculator. So you can then put in numbers, for example, the car's cash price, deposits that you can put in the term that you want to repay the loan over. You can play around with the, whether you want to add a balloon payment on the transaction.
Okay.
You can play with the, interest rates. And then it'll help you see what your installments will be depending on how you structure that, you know, the calculator, the loan agreement on the calculator. So if you match the two, you can see, okay, well, I can, you know, my salary allows me to finance a car of 2,500 rand or whatever. And then you can see how to structure the deal. How to make it match. So doing that kind of research, determining your disposable income and understanding what you can buy for, in terms of a cash price and installment will help you frame your mind what to look for. You doesn't help you looking for a German engineered car if you can only afford a, I don't know, a Korean import or something. I don't know.
Something of the sort. Yeah. And feel free to mention names if you really want to. I mean, we know that there are some that are there that are a little overpriced and some that are, well, good value for money. Let's put it that way. Now, you mentioned a lot of things here. And when I did this, I mean, I was none the wiser. I've actually just finished paying off this vehicle. Believe it or not, I didn't get out of it ahead of time. I've paid off the vehicle. It is technically mine. It's still in the bank's name. I need to do the paperwork. It's like end of the month. Was like beginning of the month was like, hey, last payment, it's now officially mine, I can go and, you know, transfer it into my name and that. But this is now what I've learned along the way. So the bank is essentially purchasing the vehicle, but they let you use it. Am I correct in saying that?
It's, yeah, that's the crux of an installment sale agreement. So the bank buys the car from the dealership, and then you pay the bank back. That's why when the on the registration documents, the bank is the title holder of the car, and the person driving the car is registered at the as the owner, okay, or the driver. So the bank ultimately owns the car until such time as the account is settled, and then we have to do the transfer of the registration documents to make the client the ultimate owner of the car.
Okay, so then that comes there. That's the trade off and the change over. Okay, but now I've sat there, I've taken a look, and I've decided I need another car in my life. I'm not going to say it has to be a brand new car or it needs to be a used car, but I need another car, and I'm thinking about financing it. Aside from the affordability, how do I go about, you know, processing this finance thing? What do I need to do when it comes to financing a vehicle? What are my responsibilities?
Your responsibilities. So mainly I would recommend that you go and chat to the finance and insurance specialists at all of the good dealerships, reputable dealerships. So these people are specially trained and with regards to the relevant regulations like the National Credit Act, mm-hmm. FASE, etc. And they are legally obligated to look after, to do a proper needs analysis on the individual, and to recommend the best structure of the transaction that for the suits your needs, and also to recommend whatever appropriate insurance products you need to mitigate whatever risk that you might be exposed to.
Okay, so you say now insurance. Is this now insurance on the vehicle itself, yeah, or is this insurance on the agreement?
So there's a whole range of insurance products out there.
Okay.
Most importantly, of course, is the comprehensive insurance cover, which protects you against theft and accidents, etc.
Yes.
Okay, so that's. But then there's also another range of products that covers the car, for example, dent and scratch protection and things like that.
Yeah.
But then there's also other products such as
if you pass away,
life cover, yeah, retrenchment cover,
okay,
and these kind of things, yes, which covers the individual. So depending on where you are in your life, mm-hmm, and what type of employment you have, and what your situation is, you might be exposed to different types of risks, which warrants different insurance products.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're unsure of the industry that you're working in, then maybe a retrenchment cover is a viable option. So these are the conversations that you need to have with the F&I, we call them, the finance and insurance manager, mm-hmm, so that he can make recommendations and get quotations for you for these specific insurance products.
I just have a question though as well.
Yeah.
Rudolf, for me, one of my biggest frustrations is when someone's self-employed, when it comes to the finance. This is something that for me is just, it's the most difficult thing to do. I mean, I've now been for 11 years, and I've had to do you know, finance on so many things, and besides the cars, the house, or whatever the case might be. But I have found this the most difficult, the vehicle finance, that people that would work for you would get it easier just because they are employed. The moment you're self-employed, you earn more, the money's in the bank, whatever the case might be, it is a nightmare.
Believe it or not, we also struggle with that.
Really, hey?
Yeah, because we are regulated by a whole range of regulations, but probably most appropriate in this instance would be the National Credit Act. And we need to do a thorough assessment, affordability assessment on the applicant in order to determine whether this person can afford the loan and whether we are not at risk for being reckless in extending credit to someone who shouldn't be getting credit.
So you have a responsibility as well. You're also being watched in a sense.
We are, and we're audited on an annual basis.
Okay.
And so we have to do all of these assessments in order to safeguard both us and the consumer. So in this instance, with the self-employed individual, proving your income is difficult because it varies. So that's why we need a 3 or 6 month bank statement in order to understand what the income and income and expenses are, in order to determine what the disposable income is, in order to see whether the installment matches the disposable income. So that's always difficult because sometimes the income would be, you know, 100,000 rand, next month is 20,000 rand. So how do you draw a balance to say, yeah, okay, the correct amount is X?
Am I right in saying you can't really work on an average, because it doesn't quite work like that? Because,
well, this is where the challenge comes in. But now you've got someone, I mean, someone's got a business that's been going for how long? Yes, it's not the same every single month. But, I mean, it's like the only thing you guys don't ask is the size of your underwear, literally. You know, the rest is like complete public knowledge. And then it's almost like you – and I'm really like open to discussion here, but this is what I've experienced. And not long ago, 2 weeks ago, that – you almost get penalized now for being self-employed, because now it's like the bank takes extra precaution wherever possible. So it's a higher interest rate that you got to pay back. There was one or two other things as well. I can't remember the exact terms for it now, but whatever you can possibly do, and I'm saying you, the bank, to make sure that you covered, is the moment someone's self-employed.
I can only acknowledge that there is a massive administrative burden on the applicant in this instance, and I'm sorry for that, but you know, the regulations is not something that we can bypass, and unfortunately we have to comply with all of these laws that affect us. On the interest rates are based on a risk factor. So in any business, if you work on risk versus reward. So if a person borrows money from you, your cousin or whatever, and you know this guy, he's good for the money, you're not going to charge him a high interest rate if he borrows money from you. But if it's some unknown friend of yours that you know, is a little bit dodgy or something like that, you're gonna want to ask him for a higher rate, because you're just not sure if you're gonna get your money back. And that same principle applies in banking as well.
So that's the principle. So it's almost like if someone can't afford, sorry, Rudolph, that's how I see it. Tell me, Chad, if you feel different. So if you almost can't afford, you're not sure if the person can, let me just nail him a little more with a higher interest rate. Because that's how a lot of the people have experienced it now, that can just afford the car.
Yeah,
you know?
I understand the whole risk assessment
side of things.
But
I hear what you're saying, but
wow,
I don't feel it being fair.
It doesn't seem fair, but it is a basic principle, a business principle. It's risk versus reward.
Yeah, and I mean, as a business, I mean, and West Bank is a business, and they are there to look after their, you know, financial interests. They're not going to make money, and they're not going to be able to continue providing a service if they happen to fold just because, hey, they worked like a charity system, you know, and just gave money away without asking it back.
Yeah, but it's not charity. I just don't agree with a higher interest rate that gets given
to
someone that can...
Well, on the other hand,
they have to get a vehicle. So they're forced to get it and pay higher interest. See where I'm coming from. So the people that struggle still, it's a little, let me just make you struggle a little more.
Yeah, but there's that difference between the guy that's sitting there and he's just started out. He's 24 years old. He's fresh out of college. He's got a startup job and that. And now he thinks that he deserves a Golf 7 GTI.
No, but that's just ignorance. I'm not talking. I'm talking. But, there's a difference.
No, but there's he feels that now that I've just started working, I deserve to spend 80% of my salary on a Golf 7 GTI to show that I have now made it. I'm sorry, but that is irresponsible.
Look, the guys get nailed on insurance there. So I don't have a problem with that.
What's that?
Because you have to have insurance. Don't you have insurance?
Yes, you have to have it. Yeah, you have to have insurance. But remember, let's be perfectly honest here. How many of the vehicles on our roads are insured?
No, but insurance, I understand, because the insurance company is liable to replace that vehicle in the case of an accident or whatever the case might be. So if it's a young driver, I think it's under 25, you get penalized for that age-wise, because let's be honest, we were all 20, 21, whatever the case might be, and we drove, we know how they drive.
We were there.
So I understand the logic to that.
No, but it's not so much that. I'm saying it's the overreaching. It's you know, where buyers go in and they sit there and they overreaching. Well, please do correct me if I'm wrong.
Vilmarie, thank you for saying that, because it's exactly the same principle as the interest rate. It's risk versus reward. A young person poses higher risk to the insurance company, and so the insurance company will ask him a higher premium. And the same with interest rates. If a person poses credit risk to the bank, doesn't matter of his age, it depends on his financial dealing.
I was going to ask you that on the age.
Yeah,
sure.
So age doesn't really matter. It's how you manage your finances and what you apply for. So if you are responsible by looking at your credit profile at the credit bureau, we see that, you know, you've got minimal debt. And the debt is being managed well, that you make your monthly repayments on time every month. And if the car that you are buying, you're paying a deposit, for example. You're not overextending yourself in terms of affordability, so you're buying well within your means. Then you will be rewarded with a good interest rate. But then the flip side also happens. Like if we look at your credit bureau profile and there's one or two return debit orders, you're buying at the absolute peak of your disposable income.
Yeah.
Then, you know, the bank will say, a little bit of risk here, so maybe we need to charge a higher interest rate, because that's just the way it works.
So in case you can't pay payment 7, we got first 6 higher. Is that what you're saying? I'm just trying.
I understand it as well, because like with the insurance, and I mean, I think if we think of this in almost an insurance sort of aspect, the chances of a 22-year-old having an accident because they inexperienced, reckless, negligent is considerably higher. You know, the insurance company is probably going to pay him something. So they're going to have to make his premiums higher. You know, where somebody that has a better record and is a slightly older, slightly more mature, and they're taking a slightly more sensible vehicle, there's a possibility that they will pay, not a probability.
So, okay, so I just want to be clear on this. So it's not, like insurance, an age thing. It is really an income thing when it comes to the interest rate. Risk versus reward.
Yeah, it's not just income. It's your disposable income and what you're buying, as well as what your credit bureau profile is like.
Okay.
That's very important.
Okay, so then I just want to ask you, so what would someone do, for example, that's now been in a debt review?
Yeah.
What do you call? So now, do they get penalized like this as well? Because I have a friend, for example, I think is it a 5-year period or something that they go through it? So things happen in life. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
Some people, good people, they get out of it. They're busy getting out of it. So they're going to still have to buy a vehicle. What is the situation? And I'm sure there's a lot of people out there in this position. How would they have to go about it? And how would they get penalized?
So, firstly, you can't apply for any credit if you are under debt review.
Yes, you've got to be out of it.
Yeah, yeah. So you have to go on through the whole process. In that instance, depending on what your situation is like and what your credit bureau profile is like, and whether you are now you're maintaining your accounts as you should, if you can prove your disposable income, and if you're buying well within your means, you will not be penalized. We assess you as a normal application. So that history doesn't count against you. Only whilst you are under debt review, you are not allowed to apply for debt.
Okay.
So it really, really doesn't count
against
you.
It doesn't affect you, yeah. But you need to keep in mind, pay a deposit, buy well within your means, leave a buffer for rising interest rates, and structure the deal favorably. Another thing that I just wanted to touch on is the car itself. It has an impact on your the credit score when we assess the application.
Okay.
For example, if the car is has a retail value of 100,000 rand and you are buying the car at 115,000 rand. It means that if something would happen and we had to repossess the car, we've paid the dealer 150,000, but the car's only valued at 100,000.
That's all you're pretty much going to get back. Huh?
Yes. So that means we are at risk of losing at least 15,000 rand on this transaction. So you also always need to make sure that the car that you are buying is within the retail value of what, you know, what the car trades for in the market. Because in that instance, the bank is also exposed to additional risk, which will also result in a higher interest rate. So all of these factors come into play when we assess the application. It's not just the individual, it's also the car that impacts on the interest rate that you will get.
Mm. Lawrence, you were wanting?
Yeah, I wanted to ask a question. What all will West Bank finance? We're all talking about cars here, but we have a bike
boats
lady.
And bikes. And
what will they finance, a caravan?
Leisure finance, yeah. Does that sort of thing exist?
Yeah, we do finance leisure items, caravans, boats, trailers,
naturally,
aeroplanes,
interest rate, and
motorcycles. And we've just, a year ago, we concluded a deal with Cycle Lab, and we're now financing bicycles.
Bicycles, yeah, but they cost.
Have you seen the prices?
Of course, yeah.
300,000 rand for a bicycle.
I'm like,
what? Which one's that?
That was a
insane
whole exposition about it.
It was a carte blanche thing, you know, and it was like, made out of fiberglass or something, and not carbon fiber. I don't know.
I don't think it's one that starts under 30, and it's mainly like 100 and more. Okay, but what's
the guy's going to come off of it. So.
Yeah, but what's the risk there? Because that's an easy thing to steal. So how do you?
Yeah, that must be. What sort of interest rates run on leisure, and what sort of standing do you need to have to be able to finance leisure?
Yeah, it's the same principles. So, mm-hmm. So based on the retail value of the item, the credit position of the individual, the affordability of the individual, the same parameters will apply. When we assess the application and quote an interest rate.
Do they take into account the fact that it is a leisure vehicle? I don't really think you can call a motorcycle a leisure vehicle. It depends which one, though.
Yeah, it depends what.
I mean, if it's an off-road bike or something of the sorts, you know, then they sort of know that this isn't going to be used for commuting. This isn't used to get the guy to his work or back. You know, this is a weekend warrior thing that he is going to be tackling, I don't know, dirt jumps with.
Be careful of that weekend warrior word. You'll get slapped.
Oh yeah, I used to be one.
So yeah, the question is basically, you're now wanting to buy a motorcycle to commute. Mm. Are you going to be penalised with higher interest rate because it's a motorcycle and not a car?
I think it's more an insurance thing. Mm. I don't know.
Yeah, they'll probably come down to trying to.
Motorcycles will have a higher interest rate than a car.
I'm actually not 100% sure whether there's different categories for the leisure items than for traditional cars. So I can't give you a specific yes or no.
Okay. Well, interesting. Actually, something worth digging into.
But I'm very curious though, because this must have been quite a process of the bicycle thing, to decide this. Because now, for me, there is quite a big risk of it getting, let's say, stolen. Then which insurance companies are actually insuring these things?
Guys, I'm sorry, but I don't have all the answers on that.
But what
I can tell you is that we only deal with Cyclab, and the three branches in Gauteng, for now. It's still in a pilot phase. So I guess if you're interested in this, then you can contact Cyclab and they can give you all of the information, how it works, who the insurance companies are, how does insurance work.
I'll tell you why I'm asking, Rudolph, because my understanding is, you can tell me if I'm wrong, is that you cannot, if you finance a car, you cannot take it until the insurance is confirmed.
Yeah.
So I'm asking, is it the same on the bicycles?
It will definitely be the same. There needs to be some sort of insurance policy, and I think insurance providers will have policies because it's opportunities for them to generate revenue as well to insure these items. It's just having the, I don't know where you're going to fit the tracker, but.
Exactly. Well, I mean, I suppose it's going to be the same as insuring household items or a cell phone or, you know, you can.
So maybe this data dot thing, you know, that.
Yeah.
They stamp
the micro dot.
The micro dot, yes.
All right, well, we're going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we're going to do our review. Our review this week is actually on the fantastic Mazda CX-5, so we're not going to get too long winded on that one, but we will return. And then we want to talk a little bit about used car. I've got a little bit of used car sales questions here that I want to throw your way, Rudolph, but we'll chat right after this.
This is CliffCentral.com. Choice. Sometimes you have it. And sometimes you don't. AutoTrader gives you the choice. Now you can shop,
compare, and buy new cars. Watch our expert video reviews and research before you buy. Auto Trader New Car. The choice is yours.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Well, there we go. We're back. Eric Clapton with cocaine.
Cease.
What? Nothing wrong. Well, I'm not condoning it. I'm just saying it's a fantastic track. It's some brilliant guitar work in there.
Put your foot in there.
Yeah, I know. Wouldn't I? Well, in any case, so as we said, we're going to be back here with the review of the Mazda CX-5. Now, it's no secret, I am a bit of a Mazda fan. So I said I've had my Mazda, and it's my second Mazda, and I do like them. But just speaking to so many people, Mazda are on the money with what they're making at the moment and what they're putting out there. And the CX-5 is no different. It really is absolutely fantastic. The model that I had on test was a 2.2DE all-wheel drive Akira model. It's pretty much the top of the range, top spec model. It is an SUV. It's a compact SUV. It's not a full-blown, full-size SUV. But it's the largest that you're pretty much going to get from Mazda in South Africa at the moment. It is just a facelifted model. It's not an all-new model, so the underpinnings are still very much the same. It's just received a few little updates. The interior, still much the same. It's the exterior that's been updated a little bit. This one retails for 486,600 Rand and produces 129 kilowatts and 420 newton meters of torque from the 2.2-liter diesel motor. And I'll tell you what, actually a fantastic, fantastic diesel motor that, and it's mated to a 6-speed automatic gearbox. Now, this is a very interesting one because their SkyActiv technology that they've applied into the gearbox is actually revolutionary. It's not a dual clutch system. It still works a little closer to a torque converter system, but it employs a little bit of a dual clutch sort of technology. But as a result, you've got fantastically smooth shifts, and it responds really well. There's none of this gear hunting. It really is. It's an amazing, amazing vehicle.
It's a good-looking vehicle.
Sorry, I killed you there.
Thanks.
My bad. It's a brilliantly looking. Yeah, it was after the cocaine comment that I cut you. I was like, no, I don't need this sort of negativity in my life.
For me, it's one of the best-looking SUVs at the moment.
I think it is fantastic. I think it really stands out. When you take a look at some of the other models, that I don't want to say that they get lost, but you can see that there's some shared design
exactly,
elements.
Exactly, where CX-5 is quite CX-5 different
sort of
on
stands
its own.
Out. And I'm really, really keen. The only way that you're really confusing it now is if you see it a CX-3.
Which, yes.
But that's understandable. It's Mazda product. So it looks like a Mazda product. And I'm really keen. I haven't had a chance to drive the CX-3. I can't wait for that. That's now...
It's coming.
Yeah, considerably more compact.
Very excited. Don't choke.
It is coming. I fell in love with the CX-5. I thoroughly enjoyed the drive. And if there was a way I could get the CX-5 on long term...
He's sitting right next to you.
Hint, hint.
You can get it on really long term. You could own one.
Yeah, which is going to lead me to one of my questions as soon as we wrap this.
Okay. Yes.
Done with your review.
Done with it to see and figure out how. But it really was. My video review is up and on YouTube and on the Auto Trader website. So go and take a look at the video review there. I really can't. I mean, you know, I'm one for interiors as well.
Yeah.
And it really was just such a fantastic interior. A little dark in places. It wasn't necessarily the brightest interior. But I've seen darker interiors as well, ones that really feel claustrophobic. Mm. This didn't particularly feel claustrophobic, but it was well-trimmed, well-fitted, a little dark in places and at times. But a really, really good performer, and I say it in the video as well, it's a car with a bit of a heart and soul. You know, it's something that almost reminds me of an Italian vehicle, just without the headaches and the drama and the, you know, the unreliability. You know?
Okay, it's reliable, but it has some, like...
There's personality to it, and it's that I found really endearing. And I found it with many of the Mazda models, but the CX-5, other than the MX-5, the CX-5 was the one that probably jumped up at me and said, hey, here, let's sit down, let's have a conversation, let's talk. You know, there was a personality to this.
Kind of like driving your favorite easy chair.
Yeah, it was. And I mean, extremely comfortable, brilliantly equipped, and especially at that level. It is, it's a lot of money. It's just shy of ½ a million Rand. But if you take a look up against the opposition and the competition to get that sort of spec level, I mean, Lawrence, we need to look at about 150 to almost 200,000 Rand more.
Oh, really?
You know, from some of the opposition. With the same sort of build and feel, and the package as a whole is really, really, really good. So go and take a look at the video there. It is on autotrader.co.za and also our YouTube channel, which is Auto Trader South Africa. So go and take a look at that. Now we're going to get back to our used car topic, and I want to find out now quickly, what is the oldest vehicle that you can finance? I have found a 1995 Mazda MX-5. Let's go with that one. I found a 1995 Mazda MX-5. Can I finance that?
So WesBank, we finance cars that's up to 10 years old.
Okay.
So 95, maybe not.
Probably not, yeah, because that's like 21 years old.
Yeah, 21.
Good grief.
But there is a way, though.
I just scared myself. 1995 was 21 years ago. Yeah. Good grief. Okay.
But there is a way to finance. You mentioned earlier about other ways of...
So that's through a normal installment sale agreement where mm-hmm. the car is the security for the finance.
All right.
So you can take an unsecured loan, which is a personal loan in essence, to buy a that kind of car. We also have a lot of customers that opt for taking an advance on their home loans.
Mm-hmm.
If you're disciplined to pay it off only over, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 years, because paying off even 60,000 Rand over 20 years will be very expensive.
Yeah, it looks like pricey.
So those are the options basically. Otherwise, you know, but save and buy cash.
But it's a higher interest, you're saying, especially if it's on a home extended home loan.
No. So extended home loan will be at more or less the same interest rates as a car finance, maybe prime plus 1 or 2.
Okay.
But a personal loan is the interest rate is quite high because there's no security that backs the loan. So it's a lot more risky for the financier to extend that. So your interest rate will be a lot higher. Once again, coming back to the risk reward principle.
So does WesBank actually give personal loans?
WesBank don't do personal loans, but we have a company called Direct Access, and they do personal loans.
Direct Access.
Direct Access, yeah.
Again, okay. I'm going to bring up this topic. They don't seem to give personal loans to self-employed
people. Really, huh? Well,
at all. Self-employed,
and
no.
And that's a little strange. I mean, I'm not, it's not an attack or anything of the sort, but South Africa, no, just on Rudolph here. I mean, I know he's with the financial institution. That is kind of strange because we're known in South Africa to have a lot of
entrepreneurs
and, you know,
my point.
And business owners and that. So yeah, that is a bit of a strange one.
If you're self-employed, then you have a scenario where maybe you just don't have enough. There's a project you'd like to, let me make a loan. I know I can pay it, but I can't maybe afford all of that now. No, you're self-employed.
Wow. Okay.
So it's curious. I don't know about this company that you just mentioned. I actually haven't, you know, been to them. So I'd like to find out anyway for interest's sake. But to my knowledge, there's no one.
So once again, it comes down to the administrative burden. You need to be able to prove your income. Yeah. And the assessment does take a little bit longer because there's no computer or a scorecard that assesses it automatically. You just plonk the numbers in and it does that. So there's actually a person that needs to sit and look at the application, do the calculations and determine
and
what the...
But let me tell you, Rudolph, I got to tell you in this case, which is that has nothing to do with you because you guys don't WesBank. I mean, you don't do personal loans. But in this case, they don't even look at the application if you're self-employed. And I'm going to mention it. NetBank
really
is one. Self-employed, sorry, no personal loan.
Wow, okay.
Not even look at your application.
Did they
even
not
know
even
what your income
you
is.
Did they collateral or not?
No, I didn't even get a meeting. This was quite a while ago, though, you know, but not even a meeting the moment you're self-employed.
Okay, so, yeah.
So I'm just putting it out there.
If you're wanting to trade and deal with classic bikes or classic cars or something of the sorts, start saving.
Exactly.
You're going to have to start it out cash.
Which brings me to a question, Rudolph. Are you allowed to have multiple finance? So if you finance a car, but then you decide you want a motorcycle for fun and games, can you finance the bike? And then you decide, okay, well, I'd like going on holiday. I'd like to buy a caravan as well. So you now have three things that you have financed. Are you allowed to do that?
Yes, of course you're allowed to do it. The question is, can you afford to do it? So as long as you can afford it and you've got a sufficient disposable income to take on additional debt, then you are free to do with your money as you please. And we will gladly finance you. But you can't finance it on one agreement. So you can't put the car, the boat, the house, everything on one contract. It'll be three different contracts.
That's what I meant.
Okay.
I have a car that is financed, but now I'm really wanting to buy a motorcycle in this year. And, I don't have that kind of money to...
Sugar mommy.
Sorry. No.
That's not weird. How old do you think I am?
Ouch. Shots fired. Well,
I don't have money.
Yeah, essentially, that is what I was asking. Would you have an existing finance agreement on a vehicle? Now you want to buy another one, but you want to stay with these same guys. Would you have to open up then another whole agreement?
Yeah, so it will be a second, another agreement. Once again, coming back to the regulations, the National Credit Act, this is regarded as a credit transaction. Mm-hmm. And this is a once-off transaction where we have to assess your income and expenses and make a decision. And we can't extend further credit on top of the credit transaction. That's where there's different types of credit agreements. For example, your credit card. It's of a revolving nature, so you pay it off, you can advance it. They don't have to do continuous credit assessments on you. So it's all to do with the different types of credit agreements that's prescribed in the National Credit Act and the type of contracts that the bank offers.
Okay. Now, just want to find out, I mean, we were talking and we mentioned at the beginning of the show about Car of the Year. There was that sort of doom and gloom sort of speech that, you know, if things go really belly up, we could be paying as much as 200% more for cars in as little as 2 years' time. And I just wanted to find out, you know, we also said that the past 6 months have been quite a bit of a economic mess in South Africa. You know, the rand's plummeted and that, and car prices have gone up. Have we seen a big shift in, you know, the buying habits of the people out there in South Africa at the moment, new versus used?
That's a very good observation. So there has been quite a dramatic shift in consumer behavior. Demand is shifting from the new market to the used market, and really because car prices have increased as much as they have. So just last month, we saw a 20% decline in applications for new car finance, and just a marginal decline, 3% in applications for used car finance.
So overall, it's actually down. The new car purchases are down. It's definitely a dwindling sort of dwindling industry, or can I say it's under pressure?
Not dwindling, but it is under pressure.
It is under pressure, yeah.
So more customers are opting for used cars, and just because the price gap between a new car and a comparable one-year-old used car is opening up so widely. And, you know, when you decide to go into the car market, you do research. You check out Gumtree and Auto Trader and all of the classifieds. And in order to assess, you know, what's out there, and just comparing it to what's on the manufacturer's site in terms of the new car price, you know, there's a big price gap. It warrants people to go into the used car market. And at the moment we are getting 2.3 used applications for every one new application. So there's the demand has clearly shifted, towards the used market.
Yeah. Okay, so we're going to see, is that going to affect the prices, do you think, of used vehicles? If there is such a demand for them, do you think that used vehicles are going to actually almost retain their value a little better, or going to become more I don't want to say more expensive, because a motor vehicle is still a depreciating asset, and you know, but is it just going to decrease at a slower rate now?
So that's another very good observation. So it's all about supply and demand. And for the past 3-4 years, the new car market has been doing quite well, with all of the demand vesting in the new market. So with very little demand in the used market, used car prices actually went into a state of deflation about 12 or 18 months ago. So that forced the price gap even wider. Now that new car prices are increasing as much as they are, and also I guess because there's been high demand for new cars, prices have also started to increase, and then the depreciating rand just compounded that. With the demand shifting to the used market, and because prices have been so low, the new car market is the supply for the used car. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So because the new market has done so well, there's been a good supply feeding the used market. So there's been high supply with low demand, which results in lower prices in the used market. Yeah. Now that the demand is shifting back to the used market, gradually you will see inflationary pressure in used cars. The used car prices will start to increase up to a point where the stock has been taken out of the market. Okay. Then you need to go back to the new market. The new and the used, are always counter cyclical, and it is always cyclical.
Wow. That's so very interesting. You know, that is actually, fascinating to think about it like that. Once the supplies has almost, dare I say, dried up in a sense, that it starts shifting back to the new. And once again, the pendulum motion just says that filters back into the used car sector, and you've got this,
I can plot another graph for you where interest rates. So when you have a low interest rate environment, you've got a strong new car market.
Yes,
but when interest rate goes up, the market shifts to the used. There's those three factors that I track.
Wow. Okay. So that is really, really fascinating. Okay. So if you're sitting there and you're thinking about purchasing a car this year, you're thinking about upgrading, trading out, you've got a vehicle, something of the sorts, paid off, not paid off. Where would you say we're going to find the best deals, and what's going to be the safest practice for us going forward in this next year? I mean, we need to keep in mind that purchasing a vehicle is a long term, and we can't necessarily predict what's going to happen in the next 2 to 3 years. A plain card house, it could all just collapse. That said, there could be a fantastic shift in the economy and things could blossom. What would you say is a good, safe way to go about things? Do we look at new? Do we look at used? Do we haggle for, interest rates? Do we take fixed or, a flexible one, a linked one? What would be a good practice for this year?
Okay, so there's a couple of things we need to touch on here. I guess firstly, the car needs to be fit for purpose. So if you are, for example, a sales executive and you make your living by driving around with the car, it's always better to buy a new car because the car won't break down and you'll have all the benefits of service plans and warranties and maintenance plans to your benefit. Because assuming you'll be doing a lot of high mileage. But if you need a mommy's car or just a roundabout, then there's no reason why you can't opt for a good quality used car.
Okay.
So you need to understand the car needs to be fit for purpose. The rule of thumb is when you buy a car and interest rates are rising, it would be best to opt for a fixed interest rates. Okay.
Okay.
So whilst rates are still low, but the outlook is that it will go up, then you benefit because buying a car is a 5-year commitment.
Yeah.
And you don't know what interest rates will be like in 5 years from now. The economy is already struggling and there are not many signs that things will improve. So take the downside assumption that things will not improve and that interest rates will be much higher in 5 years' time.
Yeah. Sorry, going to just interrupt you there, but we have run out of time. Rudolf, sorry for asking you such a long-winded question there. It needed a short, a more precise sort of approach. But we want to thank you very much for joining us. Thank you. It has been absolutely interesting and so informative, and I want to thank the rest of my guests in studio as well, co-hosts Wilmarie Jans van Rensburg, Lawrence Meany. Terribly sorry. Yes, you did have another one.
Rudolf.
Unfortunately, I'm running out of time there, but Rudolf, thank you very much. Don't forget to touch base with us on Twitter at AutoTraderSA, or alternatively, swing by our website autotrader.co.za.
Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.